Slime Life Records is proud to introduce Jay Essie's Inflation Buster Compilation.
Jay is strapped for cash and needs your help.
For just 14 payments of $14.99 every month, this compilation could be yours.
Suck, but I need your money now.
It was a hard-headed bait. It is brutally handsome. Yeah, it's tremendously pretty. He held it up and it cast it so easy in the heart of the cold, cold lake. It has a nasty reputation as a big fish too. It's got so much movement, so sweet and so smooth. It's got everything in common with Livingston. Say, God help the muskies, the light's churning red.
Cracking in the fast lane,
throwing cracking all day long.
Jay, these songs are amazing. What do I have to do to own these songs?
It's so simple. Your credit card will be billed every Monday at 6 a.m. and then once again at 6 p.m. the following Monday. But every Tuesday, you'll be billed at 4 p.m. So if you're a watcher, you'll notice.
What a deal. Well, I've been casting this rod, trolling all day, catching bullshit pike while muskies swim away. I can sit out here and blow money all day till I can go back home and put the Pepsis away. It's a damn shame what this lake's gone to for anglers like me and anglers like you. Wish I could just net one, maybe a 42, but I can't. But I can't, trolling in the new world with an old boat. Jay, how could anyone live without these songs?
The answer is so simple. No one can. Just remember, if you don't buy it, we'll send someone by your house to make sure that you do.
Songs. How do I get them now?
Easy. Just email me your 16-digit credit card number with your 3-digit PIN number and expiration date, and processing will take place almost immediately.
Live without the greatest songs of muskie fishing. Elmer's standing by. It's alright if you troll me. It's alright if you don't. I got the feeling you're giving up on muskies. Me and Jay say that you don't. You know good presentations. My hear them all day. Something's beside you. That's the time to. That's when you need figure eights.
Hey guys, I owe a lot of money to some really bad people, so please buy this compilation now.
Cause I cast and I troll. Well, Steve and Jay, they told me so. I can't get no. I can't get no.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast of Dr. J Bird.
Dr. J in the house, Steven.
Why are gambling debts so high?
I can't get into that on the air, but off the air, I will have a private discussion with you,
folks. Please buy that compilation. It's not
please
good,
help.
But
you give till it hurts.
Give till it hurts. Anyway, Jay, we're in November.
Yep.
So up north, when's the ice coming? What are we thinking?
Well, it could be Thanksgiving. You know,
so not
two, 3 weeks. Yeah,
right.
not long. Yeah.
And then
we're fine right now. We're fine right now. We had a lot of 40s. It hasn't been super cold at night the last handful of days. So just a little rain today. So it's actually been pretty nice. And fishing's been great. Not a lot of people fishing, but man, every person I talked to Friday had either been out earlier that morning, was coming back for suckers or whatever. Or the day prior, had fish on and or caught two.
Right.
Pretty good.
So if you're the frozen chosen and you're hitting it this late in the north, or you're in the south or somewhere in between, this is trophy time, right?
It is.
Tons of questions have been coming in this last week about how to target fish this time of year. And I thought, of all things, Jay, we'll get there in a minute. It's time for a structure masterclass number two, folks. We're going to get there here in just a second.
Yep.
We need to cover the comings and goings because I'm really excited that Rapalapito and the Otis are in, the Haku Savage Gear Freestyler, the Sucker, the Swim. What's up with the Gen 2 on that Sucker bait from Savage Gear? They did a new iteration thereof.
Yes. We've had them coming and going for a few weeks now. They redid the harness. It's a fixed harness. It's not a pull away harness or no magnets on the hooks or anything like that.
It's very European of them.
It was. So this is a more durable bait. The action's still great. I mean, I've got video footage underwater of that thing on our YouTube channel, and I think I put it on Facebook today too, that video. So it looks good. And it's a solid bait, and we got most of them in stock now. So, and like you said, we got all three new Rapalas are in too. I know you love those things.
Especially the Pito.
It's
one of the best swim baits for the buck. I mean, I've been fishing those for years. You can only get them in Europe. The Pito is great. That Otis, I mean, on a slow retrieve is dirty, like a swim bait. If you can't get them up, that's a great bait to hit them with. I've not through the Haku, whatever that is. So you got the Savage Gear Freestyler and the Deviator. Are both those glide baits? What's going on with that? Because the Deviator says swim.
They're both basically both glide baits with a wiggle. For the most part, they're kind of a side to side action, and they're both kind of like version twos on that as well. They made some improvements and. Those aren't the only new Savage Gear things. There's quite a few others that we have added recently. So cool stuff, and it's not an arm and a leg to get into one. So
no, I mean, that's the cool thing. With Rappler Savage Gear, it's pretty affordable. That Pito or the Otis, I mean, I'm just telling you flat out, dudes. If you fish a body of water where it is a swim bait bite, frickin' don't hesitate. I mean, I'm just telling you, because that X Pito, it comes with an extra tail, so you get two swim baits in one.
And you have that advantage of having that hard front, and we all know how much improved the hookups are with that.
Dude, it's like with the crack, and it's just like,
they
don't compress it. It's like, smack, he's on. I've not missed a fish on the Kraken yet. Not missed
one. I know. Well, me either, to be honest with you.
It's ridiculous. It's kind of scary where you go, okay, they hit it, they're hooked, forget about it. So Kraken's out here soon. What's cool though It's a slightly bigger presentation. I've been playing with the swim bait tail on the Kraken here for a minute.
I know.
So there is a big paddle tail and a big grub tail, which is kind of like an homage to the Phantom Hardhead that they no longer made. The Kraken with the big grub tail on it has a tremendous amount of wobble, and the paddle tail version has like the most ridiculous side-to-side wander. It's ridiculous. Love it. So that's very cool. But that pedo, that's a small little bait. It's going to do you well on action water or if you're targeting like moderately sized fish. Yeah. So pretty cool stuff.
Hey, there's one other thing. We got the Grabbits in too.
There you
that,
go.
That I don't know if you have one of those, but that thing is the premier hookout tool.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been very hard to get and very high demand. I think we're the only ones that are able to purchase them. So got a bunch in Friday. So check them out. There's no better made tool for removing deeply hooked fish and just operating safely on muskies and pike.
Yeah, it's got a long grip. It's a really good tool if you're not comfortable. Dealing with fish in the net, a lot of times it takes speed to get away from them. You know, if they turn their head or whatever, you got to take your time to grab it. You can get a hold of that hook or get a hold of the shank and sort of work it out. A great way to keep fish under control.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. You know, so if that's something you're looking for, I mean, that's been a hard to come by item. We're getting into that, like that nitty gritty part of the year. Right. But freaking time to stock up. Different pricing coming in 2024. I hate to say that, but that is going to be the nature of the beast. You know, so if there's things that you like and you want to get your hands on, get a hold of them, because all of these manufacturers are fighting cost increases.
Yeah, I've been working on our 24 catalog, and I'm 100% aware of pricing. I've got 95% of the pricing in for manufacturers, so when it comes to it, we've got to adjust our retail price accordingly. So, right. Unfortunately, there are going to be some increases.
It is
what not it everything, is. But it is what it is.
Folks, if you're serving a Stinton Leavenworth, 2024 Muskie Shop calendars are out, Jay. We talked about that last week. It's great if you're going to prison. Get in there and mark the days. How many do you need? Do you need 2025? How bad of a thing did you do? That's the question.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Got the new calendars coming out here. Excuse me, the new catalog. Very shortly. If you got it last year, Jay, tell them the line. You will automatically get it this year.
Yeah, if you ordered from us in 23 or if you got one in the mail, it'll be on the way in late January after it's pressed and put out. It goes out bulk mail. So most people start getting them in early February. Expected around that time. If you didn't, if it's new to you, get on our website. There's a right towards the top of the website, you'll see the catalog and click on that.
Mm-hmm.
Enter your address, and when it comes out, we'll mail you one for free.
There you go. Super excited. Any moment now, the Krakens are going to land here. Dealing with the slow, heavy seas, right? Getting them here. Krakens will be here. It's going to be a small custom order there at Muskie Shop.
Yeah.
Steve,
people ask me every day in the store, have you heard any word? You know, what's the latest?
I'm going to tell you right now. I've said it before. Oh, my goodness. I wish I'd not put that bait out. Yeah, it's been one of those things of like, if you could put the genie back in the bottle for just one more year. I've said it last week, but it's been so there. Like, oh, my goodness, it has been pretty much the entirety of my season. So I'm super excited about that. That'll be out here shortly, as you guys know. So there's that. Really, though, I want to crawl down structure again. I said it's a structure master fishing class. It's been, believe it or not, a couple years, Jay. And we've got a ton of different listeners, a ton of new listeners. And if you've not listened to that episode, I think it's Meredith. But I sort of want to just grab the lofty tome, Next Level Muskie Fishing, the book, and just kind of work through this and tell you what my thought process, right?
Okay.
Let's just get into it. Forget about it. So I start off, the core principles of structure fishing apply to each and every body of water that muskies inhabit, right? conversation could be had. A lot of anglers go, well, I fish a tiny little creek, or I fish a tiny little stream, or I fish this, or I fish that. How does that apply? How often have you seen muskies using deep holes in shallow water? Deep holes in small streams, pockets, pools, eddies, right? Structure is going to dictate where they're at throughout the entirety of the year. Okay? So whether you're fishing Leech Lake or you're fishing, you know, PP Creek in Ohio, that's a real place, by the way.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Structure is going to dictate what areas muskies are using. So they need access to deep water. Why do they need access to deep water? Well, through their daily migrations, and a lot of people will differ with me on this. Muskies stay shallow year-round. Muskies do this, muskies do that, blah, 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 blah. Okay, if they're shallow all day, every day, why can't you catch them in the middle of the day? Are they inactive? Or are they not there? Right. In general, muskies are going to make a movement from shallow to deep, deep to shallow throughout the course of the day, dependent on weather conditions. We've talked about this a litany of times. I make a living doing this. HiBrightSendDeadFoot.com. Guess what I'm not doing? I'm not worrying about shallow. Right? I'm going to make a move to the mid-depth, to the deep, open water, whatever it might be. So even in a little just tiny creek or a gigantic lake, there's going to be a daily migration. So something I find to be imperative is how we differentiate between cover and structure. Weeds, 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 weeds. I hear about weeds, weeds, weeds all day, right? Weeds, 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 weeds. Weeds are not structure. They are cover. Timber is not structure. It is cover.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between cover and structure is its permanence. Okay? So as we're breaking something down, we're looking for permanence. Are weeds permanent, Jay? No, they die. Is timber permanent? It's semi-permanent in some capacity. However, it's not always been there, and it will not always be there.
Right.
It could be a long-term thing. However, that is an adjunct to the structure surrounding it. So what I want you to think about when we're trying to break down a lake, right? And this really plays for this late period. We're focused on muskies that are on deeper breaks. We're focused on muskies that are maybe they're pressured. Maybe water temperatures are getting cold. Where are the positive structural areas of a lake, right? Well, if we admit that muskies use deep water as a holding zone and they feed shallow and they move back and forth, the areas adjacent from these deep water holding zones are going to be productive, right? Now, deep is a relative term. You know, a lake might max out at 20 feet, so deep might be 15 to 20, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It could be 100 and whatever feet. Muskies will use the transitional zones between deep and shallow feeding zones to control their metabolism. So if your surface read is 55, well, at 20 feet down, it might be 41. Right? And muskies might be down there superbly dormant because of the water temperature. It might be 35 and it's whatever you think it might be, 30 at the bottom or whatever it's looking like, right? So there is a discrepancy between the surface and the substrate temperatures. Okay? So we need to look at structure as a way to determine where muskies will be holding throughout the course of the year. So whether it's spring, whether it's winter, whether it's fall, whatever it might be, where are the shallow zones adjacent to deep water and where are the routes that muskies will take? A lot of people have been asking, how do I locate muskies during the middle of the day? How do I do this? How do I do that? You know, I aggregate questions on here all the time where it's just like, how do I find muskies on a river system? How to find muskies on this? How to find this? We are looking for shallow feeding zones adjacent to deep water. I don't care if it's a river. I don't care if it's a lake or a reservoir or, you know, a pond your uncle dug. There will be structural anomalies anomalies that muskies will gravitate to transition from these deep water holding zones, right, into shallow feeding zones. So what does that mean at the end of the day? As a muskie angler, we need to focus on map study where we're seeing these littoral zones, these food shelves, and we're focused on what leads in and out of them. Just because we find X, Y, and Z that could be a weed bed in the spring and summer and possibly decaying weeds in the fall, what we're looking for are the transitional markers that bring muskies out of the deep to the shallow. So for this time of year, the sucker fishermen or the winter southern fishermen or whatever it might be, what are we seeing on the graph or what are we seeing on a map that is a smooth transition, a gradual transition from deep to shallow, right? Now, muskies will use vertical structure during the colder water period, but in general, we'll look for those gradual transitions. So what areas really hold water, if you will, for lack of a better terminology, during a winter transition? Well, for my brain, I'm looking for points on lakes, right? I'm looking for these big plunging points where the terminating point meets with deep water. I'm looking for deep holes with shear breaks, right? I'm looking for anything that transitions smoothly from the extreme point of depth to a shallow food shelf. Now, when we're doing our map study, we need to be intelligent about what we're doing by looking at the map and going, here's a point, here's a point, here's a point, here's a point, and here's whatever, and, you know, these different elements, and learning to differentiate between their importance by looking at how they connect to the bottom. Do they terminate at mid-depth? Do they terminate at shallow depth? Or do they terminate at the main basin? I talk about in the book the importance of things that terminate at the main basin. Now, so if something terminates at the main basin, that extends out further than things that terminate at mid-depth. Therefore, it is a smoother transition from maximum depth to maximum shallow or moderate shallow, right? So as we break down a body of water, we need to make a comparison of what we have present to us. So it might be a matter of, on a, say, a reservoir, we got 10 points, or we got a big lake, we got 6 points, or we got a river, we got 4, or whatever, or inland lake, we got 2. Compare them with the relationship to the main basin. Is the main basin 25 and this point peters out at 12, but the other one peters out at 22, which means it connects in the main basin. Therefore, the main basin connecting point would be far more productive, barring any mitigating circumstances, right? If both points are not influenced by, say, incoming water, things of that nature, and they're both on the same shoreline or whatever it might be, the point that connects to the main basin versus the point that breaks off mid-depth might be far more productive. So structure fishing for muskies or any other fish. You might be a bass fisherman. You might be a walleye fisherman. You might fish tigers. I don't care what it is. Understanding the relationship of predatory game fish and structure is imperative because it narrows our scope of search. On any given day on my boat, I focus on maybe 10 maximum locations, generally less than that, that adhere to the tenets of structure fishing. They are shallow food zones next to deep water, and I fish from the shallow zone to the mid zone to the deep and back and forth or somewhere in between. So breaking a body of water down to find the zone that muskies are using, because more often than not, 90%, the old adage, Jay, you've heard it, 90% of the fish are using 10% of the water, right?
Right.
Every fish is a predator. A perch is a predator. A crappie's a predator, right? There are a few fish that are just herbivores that are not predatory in some sense. So a predatory game fish needs that transition. How far we go up the food chain and how far down we go down the food chain is of little concern opposed to what areas are going to provide that action, what areas are going to provide, you know, a predatory advantage for any game fish, whether it be 10 inches to 50 inches. So map study in structure fishing is going to allow us to break that down where we go, okay, how do we dissect a lake and we're looking for areas that will hold fish, predatory game fish year round. I'm looking for the exits, the highway exits from deep water to shallow water, the channels, the byways, the highways that allow these fish to transition smoothly. That is systemic of the fact that fish don't have a real relationship with anything other than three-dimensional space, right? You watch the show Star Trek, and guess what happens? Every ship ends up on this level plane, right, Jay?
Yeah,
we bump into Klingons and we're looking windshield to windshield because it's hard to conceptualize as humans that live on terra firma that we're not advancing on this flat plane. So if we watch the outer space show, everything has to meet on this linear plane.
Mm-hmm.
Where a fish can come straight up vertically or at a 45 or in these obtuse angles, right? Structure dictates to a fish or a predatory game fish, essentially a muskie, the rules of engagement that nothing can come up under me, nothing can go above me. If say the arc or the angle of a point is say 45 degrees, if he adheres to that 45 degree structure, he's closing the gap the entire way up to the shallows, right? Mm-hmm. Opposed to an open water, it is outer space. Things can come from below, above. It's chaos. Okay. So fish use structure to avoid chaos. And I don't mean muskies. I mean everything. Right? Everything. So you will have pelagic bait fish, but nonetheless, in general, they are suspended above structural elements of note. Okay. So structure becomes the rule to avoid chaos. So why are some places more productive than others? What matters? Their connection to deep holding water areas for muskies is the imperative factor when we're targeting muskies solely. Right? So a muskie will eat once every day, every 2 days, every 3 days, depending on metabolism, depending on water temperature. Therefore, they want to have a place that they can go to a deep water refuge and chill out, if you will, metabolize and come back up and repeat the process. Bait fish, other fish want a deep water refuge so they can do the same, and it goes up the hierarchy of the food chain. Okay? So a muskie wants to be close to the fridge, the old adage, but they want to be close to deep water. And now that plays in some capacity on the realm of stability, right? So a muskie in the dead of winter doesn't want to be up in 2 feet of water because tomorrow it could freeze over in the edge, right? And the edge becomes chaos. Deep water is stable. Deeper water is a stable environment. Fish crave stability. You see it all year long. We have a messed up weather pattern. Guess what happens? Nothing good. We have stable weather. Things happen. Okay? When the edges and the shallow zones are unstable, instability is the status quo in the shallow zones. Mid-depth and deep ranges are the most stable aspects of a body of water, deep and mid being relative. Therefore, muskies will gravitate to those zones. How do we find them? These are the mid and deep zones adjacent to shallow food shelves. Did this just a week ago. Here's a notoriously productive shallow zone on a body of water, a fish. Nothing is there. Go to the mid zone. Look, we're always talking check shallow, mid, deep. go to the mid zone. I'm seeing bait fish. We start targeting deep. Whammo, bammo. Thank you, ma'am. Right? Fish in the net. So making adjustments for where fish are holding becomes far easier if we're fishing zones that have that interconnectivity. Now, does this play on every body of water? In my mind, it does. And what scale is where people struggle? Okay, so scale is where we struggle to make an observable demarcation or observation where this plus this equals this, right? Now, that discrepancy in observation, is that systemic of a lack of structural knowledge or a lack of electronics or a lack of patterning? Okay. Wow. Sorry. Not to crawl down the rabbit hole, but I feel like it today. We need to make a call where we have found bait fish. Bait fish are X, Y, and Z. What are they relating to? Okay. What are they relating to?
Mm-hmm.
Are they relating to quote unquote open water? Sometimes that's the case. And that's what people are thinking. Well, there's bait fish or Cisco's or whatever in open water. Great. What's there? There's something there. Are we observant enough to find what is there and how it relates to a littoral zone? Right? Now, littoral zone does not mean some mud flat. It theoretically could be a reef, right? It could be the top of one rock. It could be a litany of things that provide a transition from deep to shallow. Once we find that, we will understand the relationship between forage and muskies in an area. Okay? What I'm trying to convey is once we understand a zone that perennially holds muskies, where are they at? What are they doing between that deep and shallow zone? Is there a channel? Is there a rock bar? Is there a point? Are there humps? What is leading these fish between a deep zone and a shallow zone? Because during the majority of the year, they're going to be on similar transitional zones, right? Just because winter shows up does not mean muskies go to a different lake and they react differently. They are in one body of water. This is all they know, right? So the question that comes up all the time, I fish an inland lake and it is in Wisconsin and it's this tiny little body of water and there's only so many things that look good to me. The argument's been made, and I've said in the book, or I'll say it again. A muskie has zero point of reference between the lake he is in and a Canadian Shield Lake or anything else, right? So if he's in Lake Tomahawk, he does not have a point of reference for what Eagle Lake looks like or Wabagoon looks like or Lake of the Woods.
Sure.
Or if he's in, you know, Wildcat, or whatever. I'm trying to think of the worst bowl-shaped lake. You know, Lac Vieux d'Azur, a bunch of tigers in there, and it's this shallow choke thing. They don't have a point of reference, but genetically they're predisposed, and as a predator they're predisposed to use these areas that allow quick access to deep water. Okay. There again, deep is relative, access is relative, transition is relative. And think back, Jay, how many fish have you caught out of shallow zones that the boat is setting in 15 to 20 and you're throwing up into 5 and 10?
Sure. Right. A lot.
Or you're in a river and the boat's sitting in 10 and you're throwing up to 1. Mm-hmm. But rarely do you catch a fish where the boat's sitting in 5. You see what I'm saying? Like, you might find those food shelves where muskies are using it, but there's something adjacent. There's a connecting element between shallow and deep. Yep. So as we're breaking down a map, we're going to look for shallow to deep transitions. Again, I said points. Points provide that very smooth transition from shallow, if it's a shoreline point, down to the main basin. That is a complete transition or some variation thereof. Littoral zones, sand flats, weed flats, they often come out and they'll taper down, right? Now, how do we dial in further? That becomes the question. The answer there, Jay, is break lines. right?
Break so, lines.
We're breaking down, for lack of a better term, an inland lake in Wisconsin, right? And everyone says it's a featureless bowl-shaped lake.
Hear it a lot.
We will find, regardless, irregularities. I've never seen a lake that is perfect. You know, I was going to say perfectly, but like it's this perfection of a bowl. Like it came out of the Chinese factory and it is this perfect bowl and there's nothing. I call phooey. You will find irregularities. Now, if you have a crappy map, you might not see it. But you might find different angles and different levels of break line truncation. So when we're looking at a map and we're trying to understand what the lines on it mean, the tighter the lines, I've said it before, I'll say it again, the tighter the lines are together, the steeper that break is, right? So break lines are a human construct. It doesn't mean that they're there on the bottom. Muskies don't see them, but it's denoting the transitions from, say, 5 to 10 feet or what it might be. So muskies in this quote-unquote bowl-shaped featureless lake, they're going to cue in on things that matter regarding break lines, right? So that is truly the structure of a lake, the angles, if you will, the transition from deep to shallow and how sharp that is. So the tighter the squiggles, the sharper the break. The more space between them, guess what, Jay? The more gradual it is. Well, muskies being a up and forward predator, guess what they like? Sharp, right? It gives them a predatory advantage. Most bait fish want a predatory advantage where they exert the least amount of energy for the maximum amount of calories. Sharp breaks provide that because it's an ambush element. So even in these quote unquote featureless lakes, we're going to look for those elements. Now, during the winter months, like we're talking about or whatever it might be, structure is the end all be all. But in the summer, we might have weed beds and you go, well, there's wonderful weeds on X, Y, and Z point or whatever this bay. Structure will still play to find the spot on spot. Right. So if we have good structure and good weeds, we're going to find what we want more regularly. Right. So what I'm talking about is structural elements that play with the littoral zone, whether it be feeder creeks, whether it be the points we mentioned before, anything that can play structurally with the littoral zone. Muskies typically are going to feed shallow and hold deep. We're following their transition using structure from shallow to deep throughout the course of the day, right? So what am I looking for? So, Jay, just, you know, you've read the book. We've talked about it for years. Structural elements that stand out Wisconsin. What are stuff in some of these inland lakes you're going, this makes sense? Is it creek channels? Is it transitions? What makes sense to you?
Yeah. Yeah. We have a lot of lakes that are not seepage lakes, but what do you call that? Not drainage lakes. Right. They're seepage, drainage, and, you know, inlet active lakes. What do they call that? That have, you know, there's lakes around here that have multiple inlets and outlets. Of course, that's a play. You know, you've got a creek channel structure wise going through that. There's a lot of lakes that there's one that we fish that's relatively small that has a creek channel. That is excellent structure.
All right.
It always plays spring, summer, or fall.
Right.
So, yeah. There's quite a variety. As we've talked about it before over and over again, the cool part about the lakes around here is that there is such an incredible variety and number-wise, size and type.
Right. Where you come to the south where the enormity of a single body of water can be overwhelming, right? So, excuse me, breaking down a small inland lake in Wisconsin versus a reservoir, it's not a dissimilar process. What are the dominant structures that tie to the deepest water? It never fails, right? Never fails. So, Jay, I think one of the lakes we're thinking about where we get food at the other end of the lake, right? So we launch and there's a place we can get food at, right?
Okay, right.
You know, gotcha. The lake I'm talking about,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going from the restaurant and go north, to the northwest is one of the most productive areas. It transitions smoothly to the depths. The eastern shore is sheer, right?
Correct.
Where the transitional zone is most productive year-round. So I do the same thing on the bodies of water I fish in the south. The enormity of them might be staggering, but if I take these zones that transition with the most transition, if you will. So it's not a matter of shallow to deep. It is what is the accentuating factor. Do we provide mid shallow to deep, or we just provide shallow to deep? The zones like a point, if you will, or a giant shoal that provide a transition from shallow to deep are the most productive. So it's not a matter of finding a shoreline next to deep water. It is a shoreline that transitions gradually, right? The gradual nature of it provides muskies the most latitude in their daily movement. So again, let's say a cold front comes through and they don't want to move quote unquote truly shallow 10 to 0, but they want to move 15 to 20. They have that. We're looking for gradual transitions. That seems to be the key everywhere I go. Canada, Wisconsin, down here in Tennessee, it doesn't matter. Things that really stand out to me, though, like you said, some of these bodies of water, they'll have a little beaver dam on them in the Wisconsin, or in Tennessee, it'll be a river channel. Current really plays to this, right? So if current is present, it can dictate what structures are most important. The relationship of current and structure. Now you go, well, I fish so-and-so lake and it's got a creek on the north and a creek on the south, but there's no current. BS. There's a modicum thereof, right? Now that current might be felt and might be present only in the north end near the inflow and only on the south end near the outflow, but current is present. Structure in conjunction with current is always going to play in my mind, right? So an input or an output of water in conjunction with structure is going to be far more important to me than structure minus current, if present in any capacity. So at the end of the day, you know, I'm trying to help you break down. I've got X, Y, and Z body of water, and I can't find fish, and what do I do, and where do I start? So, you know, is there current? Is there no current? Is there points? Is blah, 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 blah. We're breaking through it. So if I have current, things that are adjacent to current are going to be far more considerable than things are not adjacent to current. Now, how do we denote that? Is there a presence of a creek channel in the said body of water? Okay. If there's an originally eroded creek bed, it's going to be far more important what connects to said creek bed or what suspends above said creek bed than anything that is far adjacent from, right? So a point that terminates at the creek bed is going to be a far more important thing in my brain than a point that does not associate itself with a creek bed that has current, okay? So in the hierarchy of things, if we go from this bowl-shaped lake, we're just looking for a tighter break versus anything else, then we go to a lake that has current or input or output or whatever. I mean, current does not mean a drift. It could be there's this small flowing creek that goes one out way out the other way. Right?
That's yeah, you're not going to notice it. You're not going to see it. You know,
but it's there.
You're going to visualize it because of the features that are, mm-hmm. that are obvious, like an in or outlet creek.
Right. Where the lake we just discussed, guess what's on the north end of that lake, Jay? An incoming creek.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? One of our favorite places to fish. There's a creek coming in on this tiny little body of water. There's actually two. And both those areas are productive.
Why they're productive? Because things are moving. They gravitate fish in. Predators up and down the food chain gravitate toward these things. And what I'm trying to drive home, I guess, at the core of this matter is muskies don't do arbitrary things. What they do has little to do with boredom. Muskies don't have thoughts, nor do they have feelings. They don't get bored. Right? People get bored. We've been throwing the same bait all day long. This sucks. Well, keep throwing it. Right? You know, a fish does not have the capacity for feelings. What it has a capacity for is me eat, me reproduce. That's it. And I say me, and it's funny. I'm joking. I'm trying to caveman talk. They're not even cognizant enough to know they're a me, Jay.
Right? I think you're right.
They're not self-aware. Right? At some point when you're about 3 years old, you wake up and go, oh, holy crap, I am self-aware. Oh, no. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Fish don't do that. They're not self-aware. There's no self. It is just an anatomical response, right? That demystifies or desexifies, if you will, because everybody, old Mo, the scourge of this lake, covered in bucktails, right? He'd eat your arm off. No, he wouldn't. That fish, whatever, you know, like the legends of muskies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Jingle bells, he's covered with more spinner bells. He jingles when he swims. That's whatever. Put a leader on fish 80-pound braid, you'll get jingle bells. It doesn't exist. Or this upset muskie that eats children and ducks. Right? It is a creature that is exploiting its habitat. How do we exploit how it exploits its habitat? That's it. Right? Exploit what we know about our prey. Our prey, being the muskie, will exploit a body of water for easy access to food and quick access to stability. That's it. Right? So, yes, you will pick up on occasion. Let's say I launch at North Shore of Eagle Lake and I troll towards Boulder. And that takes me through like some vast open water. And I troll past Wabagoon. I troll past Alien. I troll past all these amazing reefs, right? In open water. Yeah, I'll pick a fish up to one again. Are they transitioning? Are they living there? Question. The vast majority are adjacent to deep water and shoreline cover and structure, right? So you always find an outlier. But the fish that are in open water, they're there because, my brain is off and I'm dumb and I just hit things that go by, right? Or I pick off a Cisco. So take the emotion out of it and take the feelings out of it and go, this is an exploitable thing. The thing I'm looking for has exploitable traits. Their exploitable traits are they are adjacent to deep water, right, in shallow food zones in general. So, yes, let's say we find a river and it's 25 feet deep and there's a place I'm thinking of right now. And I just troll it 5 feet deep over the open water of that. Yeah, every 50th pass I might get a strike. But every fifth pass, I get a strike fish in the cover structure adjacent to shallow water. You see what I'm saying? Like, statistically speaking. Yep,
you're saying find the percentages and exploit them.
Exactly. Because muskies are not down there going, I'm the most prized game fish in freshwater. I'm so much smarter.
And they're not going, I'm going to do something they're never going to think of. And I'm going to go off this area here.
Nope. He's not muskies. Okay. Sad fact. Jerry is setting down. Muskies do not adjust because of angling pressure.
There you go.
They don't. They cannot conceptualize angling pressure. However, they can equivalate vibration with negativity, right? So their staging will not change, but the response will change. So people that are fishing, right? People that are fishing Metrolex going, no, you're right. You can't throw double eights on a Metro Minnesota body of water and expect all hell to break loose, right? However, that fish has not changed its life cycle based on pressure. It's changed its response, right? Touch the stove, you got burnt. Touch the stove, you got burnt, right? So I have a wonderful dog at home. This is the best thing I think about nature versus nurture, right? So I have a rescue dog. I have two dogs, but I got one rescue dog. That dog, if I pat him on the ass, Jay, I'm talking like good game him, he freaks out, right? He was abused. You hit him negatively, and I'm talking like pap, pap. I'm talking like the softest little tap. Does not fly with him. Right? He acts like you just clubbed him over the head. You have to just, hey, buddy, you know, the softest little pet. There's no fast actions or anything. He had a tough go of things. Mm-hmm. A muskie that's been caught five times, yeah, he ain't hitting bucktails. Nature versus nurture, conditioning, right? Now, mm-hmm. Does my dog know negativity? Maybe in some capacity. Right, but he knows the hand of man, where a muskie will know the hand of man, but he doesn't know what it is. He doesn't conceptualize angling pressure. He goes, vibration bad, me no take. And I say me no take, I'm trying to be neophyte, but there's no me, there is no, right? No. That doesn't trigger me because that has a negative connotation. Right. What I'm getting is my dog, there's a rescue. I pat him on the butt, the softest little tap, a little pop might escalate. Right. So that vibration might escalate into something negative is the best way I can put it or conceptualize it. So muskies are not going to conceptualize pressure. They're not going to change their nature versus the nurture. So I'm getting at. So nature versus nurture, right? Human nature is to do X, Y, and Z. But if we beat the crap out of our kids, they'll turn out to be pieces of shit, right? And they'll do this or they'll do that. Well, muskies don't change that. They don't know anything to do that. Their very nature is to be where they're supposed to be. What has happened to them is the nurture, if you will dictate how they react. Okay. So that's my concept on pressure. Very sorry. I might be wrong. I might be right. I think I'm right. So muskies are not going to change up where they're going to be. They might react negatively to what they've perceived or what they've seen in the past. So through their very nature, they will use the similar zones. They're going to use whatever's productive to feed themselves. Now, structure seems like this concept, Jay, a lot of times people, John Bingham, great, great podcast listener. Hope you're listening. John told me one day, he said, I love the way you sort of approach this because everybody tries to make it a big deal out of it and you make it simple, right? So along those lines, my thought with structure is this. Structure is simple, right? It's connecting zones. It's interesting features that hold bait fish, therefore hold muskies, right? There's not voodoo or black magic. We just need to be analytical of the bodies of water we're fishing. Now, you know, I could laden you with terminology or this, that, and the other, right? I love the word littoral zone. That's just where vegetation can grow from 12 to 0, right? Big word, who gives a shit? What we're looking for is the interplay of forage and shallow zones. So we talked about current, Jay. What else can influence the positioning of bait fish other than current? One guess. Ready? Wind. Yeah. Here's your guess. right?
Absolutely. So, how many times have you looked over the boat and seen the weeds pointed in a different direction?
Okay. So let's take the weeds, take the weeds out and say it's dead of winter now. And we don't have that pointer. Here's this arrow. The top of the weeds are arrow, like Jay's saying.
I'm just saying how clearly it impacts.
I'm sorry.
You okay?
I've got the frickin', you know what? I hate this time of year, and it's my seasonal allergies. I apologize. I'm having seasonal Pepsis too. Seasonal. So, wind. The duration of wind will dictate its impact on a body of water. However, let's say, Jake, let's take everybody in your head, conceptualize a perfect circle lake, and there's a point on the left and there's a point on the right. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
At 9 o'clock, there's a point, and at 3 o'clock, there's a point. They both terminate at the center of this body of water, right? So on the hands of the clock, 9 and 3, there's nothing in between. Well, if the wind is blowing towards 3 o'clock, which means the east, for 3 days, guess where bait fish will be, Jay?
They'll be in that area.
Day one, where will they be?
Day one would have less impact, so it could be on the other side.
Day two
is going to have impact.
Right. Which could be further off of, but closer to. Day three, they're there. Right. Dependent on the duration. I talk about this about reading the water, or the conceptualizing, right? So Circle Lake, love it. 9 o'clock point, 3 o'clock point. They're the same point. They are sisters. Right? Genetically perfect twinsies. There's no difference. If the wind is blowing off of 0.9 and blowing into 0.3, this preferred structure will change. Regardless, let's say for a week they're on 0.9, Jay. Right? For a week. If that wind's blowing out of there to 3, it will shift. Right? Now you go, where do my open water fish come from? Those are day two fish. Things are moving. Things are transitional. I have always thought that open water fish are transitional fish. Now, there's an argument for adjacent fish. There's an argument for current or warmth temperature fish. But say on a natural lake, open water fish are transitional. Because
kind of like they're staging for opportunity.
There you go. So if I said, Jay, I line up 20 pizzas, right?
Ooh.
And I get a leaf blower.
Okay.
And I'm just going to hose these pizzas down with a leaf blower. Where are you going to be?
What a waste.
Exactly. You might snag a piece. Or corn pops or cereal. I mean, imagine just me and you, 20 boxes of cereal, and I got a leaf blower, and you got to catch some in your mouth to feed yourself for the day. Right.
Well, we tried that experiment when you were up last month, but it didn't go over well. No, but it was bad.
No, in reality, what I'm getting at is a joke, but where muskies are the apex of a food chain in freshwater, they're not as... They're not as influenced by a 10-mile-hour wind, right? They don't care. Does nothing. But the little guys are. So yeah. Day one, the muskies are like, oh, why'd the perch go away? Because the perch were eating the freaking fry, and the fry were eating zooplankton.
Yes, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, zooplankton's blown across the lake, and then it moves everything, right? Understanding the food chain. It starts at the very bottom and makes its way to the top. Okay? So the transition we need to make structurally will be dictated by conditions. We talked about current. And I find that to be so important in any body of water that's present. But current is often trumped by wind, right? So that wind movement will push things. Is it up current, down current, across current? What is that? We need to make an observation. We need to make an assessment. You know, that's how we select structure. Structure is not this like I said, John Bingham, and God bless him, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
You decomplicate. Decomplication of structure fishing is shallow to deep transitions. It works. If you doubt that, stop doubting it. Adhere to it until you go, oh, that makes sense. Right? That's it. Joe Bucher, Steve Herbeck, I don't care who you are. Whatever. Cover be damned. Weeds are cute. Timber's cute. Structure dictates everything. So, Eagle Lake. Me and Herbeck know it like the back of our hand, right? Drive the thing backwards, blindfold, and drunk from end to end. Yes, rocks and weeds are important. Their relationship to structure and that structure's relationship to deep water dictates the productivity of shallow cover. Right? Jay, have you ever fished a weed bed that sucked?
Absolutely.
Me too. And you go in these weeds and go, these weeds are awesome. And there's nothing there. And then you hit this little weird patch. You go, there are four muskies on this crappy little patch of weeds. Why is that so good? Structure. Rarely can you show me, or if any time can somebody show me, you know, I caught two over here, but this wonderful area did nothing. But this little area was money. You will find some kind of structural draw, right? A perfect example, a lake. I'll spot burn the crap out of this when I'm done with it, right? Squaw Lake, now called Amber, right? Everybody's fished it. If you're not fished it, fish it. You have an incoming creek next to probably the most productive numbers place you've seen. What's there, Jay? Explain what's happening next to that creek.
Explain what's happening with that creek?
On Squaw.
Food source.
Right.
Food source.
Current.
There's great structure. There's a shallow transition.
Right. Wait, slower down, though. So we have current from the creek, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is eroded what? A shallow shelf. Because most of the time your boat's setting in 20, you can throw up to 2, right? So it's introducing what? Food, like you said, into a situation where you have a deep transition, a channel, to a shallow predatory zone. That,
yeah.
How many fish get caught there a year? 500?
I imagine it's a very high percentage.
I mean, it's ridiculous for the amount of pressure it sees. Right? So you have incoming water, current, erosion, which creates deep shallow, which is another point. Creek channels are eroded, right? If there's current present, there will be erosion, therefore, right? So we have that transition to deep to shallow. We have current, which is introducing nutrients and or bait fish or whatever will spur the food chain in any given body of water. That erosion creates that deep to shallow transitional zone. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Probably one of the most notorious spots in the Northwoods. Right? If you want another one, there's a reef above it. But nonetheless, or a hump. But that little zone just seems to continually provide fish one after another, 20 boats a day, right? But muskies always use it. Why they use it? Well, the current, the introduction of that food source, the introduction of whatever you want to think it is, the zooplankton up and down the food chain with that predatory reach and that access to deep water, just they can't stand it.
They can't stand it. Yeah. I mean, it's high percentage to them. It's an easy meal. It's within their nature to seek out something like that.
Right. So I've been harping this deep to shallow. You go, why does that matter? Okay. Is it metabolism? Yeah, that's cute. I want to eat and I'm going to sit. However, personally, and it's anecdotal at some point or observational, if you will. That's systemic of safety zones, right? So deep water provides the most stability. Says we get a cold front, and let's say a really nasty cold front, and nothing's biting shallow. These zones that are adjacent from those shallow feeding zones, if you know how to target them, can be productive, because fish want, muskies explicitly, want a retreat that's stable, right? So stability next to food, right? Jay, what's over your shoulder?
No, I'm not following you. What do you mean?
Look over your right-hand shoulder, and it's sitting in your kitchen. Your refrigerator. Right? You are in your recliner, your TV's in front of you, and over your right hand is food. You have stability and food.
Yep.
Right? What is the desire of a living creature? To live. What do we need to live? And when we take away the sexiness of a muskie that's this voracious predator, what do they want? Food to live another day. What is the most stable place they can be that provides them food? Stop overthinking it. Right? Right now, I am 22 feet from a refrigerator. Jay, you are 7 feet.
Right? Not anymore. I'm dead center.
Jay's dead center going for another Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At the most animalistic core of your existence, you want water and food. Well, muskies don't have to drink. They got all the water they can need. And food. That's it. No thought, no feeling, no emotion. Right? There's nothing worse, and we do it all the time. I'm notorious. Anthropomorphic qualities, Jay. The muskies are finicky. The muskies are in a bad mood. The muskies are this. The muskies are that. The muskies are mad. They are not any of the above. They are doing what is biologically beneficial. That's it. What is biologically efficient for us as humans? To have access to food and water. Well, muskies, again, don't need water. They need access to food at all times. Where does food tend to gather? Positive structure, right? I don't believe that muskies give a damn about structure. I believe that they exploit it because they don't know any different. Right? If Jay walks over his shoulder and walks to the fridge, he'll know, he knows there's a Pepsi in there. And if he has too many Pepsis, there's a pizza, right? And I know if I walk into my living room and cry and bitch at my wife, she'll make me a pizza. There's that. But don't overthink it. These are not some intelligent creature. They are, and I'm not trying to denigrate. I'm trying to get to the core of the matter, which is they are reactionary to their environment. Their environment is structure. Cover is a benefit. Structure is what they have to deal with most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Most muskies do not venture very far. Right? Jay, when's the last time you got in Wally's refrigerator across the street?
It's too far away, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy.
Right. Opposed to, I know there is a food source right over my shoulder. Why would I leave? I don't get bored, and I don't care.
I get bored.
Yeah, you get bored, but muskies don't. Right? That is what I'm looking at structurally. Not to bore you to tears, but that's my thought. Why is structure important? Because it dictates the positive places that muskies know that the fridge is right there. Therefore, they can close the gap and predate. Okay, muskies are sprinters, not marathoners, right? If muskies were marathon runners, they would be all open water, every one of them. They're sprinters. They want to close the gap in shallow water, so they expel the least amount of calories for the highest caloric intake. Right?
Quick and easy.
Quick and easy. Caloric risk, caloric reward. Tight structure, tight spaces afford them the opportunity to ambush and get it done quickly. So let's say I eat a perch. I'm Mr. Muskie. And a raw perch is, I'm making it up, folks, don't quote me, 500 calories, right? If I expel 100 calories getting him, I'm better off for it.
But it's still a snack. Yeah.
Whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I do not know, and I don't think anybody really knows. Maybe someone does, but let's say the caloric needs of a 50-inch muskie. What is the caloric needs of a 50-inch muskie in 70-degree water? I would love to know, right? He needs X amount of calories to respirate, maintain buoyancy for X amount of time, right? Okay. Bob Klinesworth, if you're listening, let's figure it out. I love Bob. But Bob's that physicist that was at the muskie shop bash, but nobody really knows, but it's something worth
looking at.
Let's say a 50-inch muskie, she has X amount of caloric needs. I need to intake X to maintain for X days, right? You cannot afford to become caloric deficient by moving far away from a food source, right? A muskie can't, there's no, I think I say in the book or whatever, there's no orange juice bottle in the fridge, right? Jay, we've all done it. I do it all the time on the boat. I become calorically deficient, therefore I'm hypoglycemic, right? Hands are sweaty, mom's spaghetti, I don't know where I'm at, right? It is this like, whoa, my brain is just kooky. I drink an orange juice or I take in a juice box because I'm a 12-year-old. And that sugar kicks me up and I'm back to normal. I can figure out how to feed myself and I'm not losing my mind. Where a muskie, once they become hypoglycemic, guess what, Jay? They have no clue. They can't do anything. There's no respite. There's no save, right? So that fish needs to not venture too far from the food, but needs to be staged in such a manner that they have access thereto.
Yeah. And right. Therefore, muskies are not thinking, right. I'm going to try something different today.
No.
I'm going to go off in this kooky area and check it out.
And check it out. Abso-frickin-lutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Jay? Go out in your back, and I say this, guys, Jay's house, right? To paint the picture, Jay's got a lounge chair and a couch, and it points at his TV, and his kitchen's right behind him, if you didn't catch on that, right?
Yeah.
Jay is not going to venture out into his backyard and sit out there and go, how am I going to feed myself tonight? Because it's exciting. Muskies don't go on adventures. They don't try something different because they want to or they're bored. I think we're talking structure, and what I'm getting at is structure. And listen to Structure Master Class 1, read the book, whatever. The reason I'm following the tenets of structure fishing is they dictate where these things have to be. But right now we're talking about the nature of why they have to be there. And Jay, just great point. They're not there because they want to try something different out of sheer boredom, right? In a body of water where muskies say they feed on walleye, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
How many meals of walleye do they eat in their lifespan? All of them. They don't get bored. There's no taste. There's no change. There is whatever. It is caloric value in, caloric value out, right? You know, it's not like they go, oh, suckers, and it's tastier. There's no thought. Take out the anthropomorphic qualities out of it. Like you said, I'm not going to venture out and go, I want to do something different because I'm bored. You are where the food is, or you're adjacent to where the food is at all times, out of convenience, out of caloric risk, caloric reward. Guess what happens? And I guarantee it happens in some capacity, right? Because no predator is perfect. How many calories does a muskie burn when he loses the food source? We don't know, right? But let's say he's in a salmon state. Fish go into a state at some point where they're just shut down, right? Brain dead.
You're saying where his food source is no longer available?
Right.
It is
less convenient than he needs it to be.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Right. Let's say it moved 500 yards. What do? They burn calories looking for, right? How long can they look? It makes only logical sense that, you know, with a solment period in a fish's brain, or it's just kind of like half on, half off, it's like, brain dead, right? Say they're on smelt or whatever it is. And it's the black of night, and they kind of lose that vibration. They kind of lose that thread. That is a net negative to the caloric intake. They have to overcome a caloric deficit to get dialed back in. That is bad, right? You do not want to overcome that caloric deficit. So if a fish is
Do you think that explains stressed out muskies body weight wise to some extent?
What, those skinny fish?
Yeah, yeah.
I've always found that lakes that have skinny fish, they hit. They just hit. Right. Mm-hmm. Bam. You get an eagle, like Tennessee where I fish, these things are fat as crap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Five follows on Panoptics, two visual follows and get one. Eagle Lake, they come in. You get on some of these skinny bodies of water, these dwarf fish or these fish, there's a ton of them. They hit every time because they're not going to commit unless they're getting a meal because there's not enough forage, right? So these snaky bodies of water that seem to like, there's not many bodies of water where it's like, oh my goodness, this churns out donkey fat fish, right? And tons of them. Have you noticed that? There's not like this lake that's like, this turns out nothing but 40 pounders. And they hit like crazy. No, it's the trade-off. Like, the more forage there is, the more apt they are to not hit. The skinnier the fish are, the more apt they are to hit. It's caloric risk, caloric reward. Right? When you demystify these things and go, they're an animal that is responsive to their environment, they're going to respond accordingly to whatever the environment is. So if there's not a lot of forage, guess what? They're going to be eating like crazy. If there's a ton of fatty forage, shad, ciscos, tons of walleye, it's going to be a finicky lake. You know, maybe St. Clair, there's a ton of fish there and it's like, it's shallow, blah, 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 blah. But I can't think of some inland lake or some reservoir where you go, this thing turns out 30-inch fish that have a gut on them all the time that hit like crazy. I can think of some inland lakes where you go, it's probably a 30% muskie population versus forage and they hit anything. And they're all 32 inches long and they're skinny and crap. Right? So you can't have it both ways. Caloric risk, caloric reward. What I'm getting at structure is this, to bring it full circle, if you will. Use structure to denote what areas will be productive. Do not deviate from this. If you cannot find fish, don't try and reinvent the wheel. Reinvent your presentations to where muskies should be seasonally. Whole other podcast, right? But structure will denote where they are holding in relation to bait fish. Bait fish always adhere to structure. Therefore, muskies adhere to it. Are they deep, mid, shallow? How do we exploit that? We look at break lines. We look for sharper breaks. We look for more dominant areas, humps, points, whatever it might be, reefs. Reefs and humps and points are all what? Transitions from deep to shallow. A hump. We don't fish too many holes, Jay, right? In rivers, we'll fish holes where we have a transition from shallow to deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in lakes, rarely we're looking for, here's this 20-foot divot, and we target them there. We're looking for that deep to shallow routine. Typically, a hole in a river is going to be a staging place for a cold water, a winter muskie. But in general, we're looking for areas that provide slightly shallow structural ambush points for muskies. If we add cover like weeds and timber onto that, that's a net benefit. But it's not always necessary. So muskies were going to use these deep to shallow transitions. Deep to shallow is relative. And they're going to do it adjacent to bait fish. So how do we ensure, Jay, that our structure is good?
Looking for an answer?
Yeah.
How do we ensure our structure is good?
Right.
The presence of bait fish?
There you go. That's it. So if we go to lake, okay, the lake with the restaurant we like to eat at on, right?
Yep.
There are two shallow bays. I'm about to sneeze again. I apologize. Holy crap, folks.
Let it all out, Steve.
It's horrible.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to make it. Hello.
Folks, I have the worst seasonal allergies. I apologize. I should edit Bless that you. Out, but I won't.
Keeping it real.
I'm keeping it real. So we have where we put the boat in, right? Shallow littoral zone right there. North end, shallow littoral zone. Creek entering in the north. Creek exiting on the south. Two shallow bays in between there. You know, east, west are completely different. And there's one point, and we caught fish off that point. You look at that body of water, this little inland lake. Has a little bit of structure for a body of water in that zone, but if the bait transitions to that shear break, I'm going there. You have to use your graph. So you take structure as a roadmap and electronics as confirmation, right? So if,
yeah, there you go.
If you look at a point and there's nothing on it, guess how many muskies are on it, Jay? Probably none. But you don't have the forethought or the foreinformation to realize that the wind's been blowing out of the east, or excuse me, out of the west, and everything's on the western shore, eastern shore, whatever it might be. We need to make an assessment from there. So it's not a matter of we walk out and we have Steve and Paul said this and Jay said this, and these are the perfect muskie structures. You have to take it as a whole. How are these structures interplaying with current and weather? Positive structure is positive only if current weather conditions allow. Okay? That's why it's important. If we're fishing Saturday, right? We got a trip Saturday. Watch the weather from Monday until Saturday. Go. It's been blowing out of the west for 5 days. I need to look on the eastern shore for positive structure. There might be some westerly. We talked about that bowl-shaped lake, Jay. There's 9 o'clock point and 3 o'clock point. Well, 3 o'clock point's going to be better if it's westerly wind, right? Blowing to the east. We need to be considerate of conditions in conjunction with structure. Okay? So the hierarchy, positive structure, transition to deep to shallow, number one. Number two, current. Does current play? Current can trump weather. If current is strong enough, you've had heavy rains, right? Or you are on a reservoir or a flowage, current can trump weather. But if you're on an inland lake and there's not, quote unquote, significant current present, guess what trumps that, Jay? Wind. Weather patterns, right? Everything needs to be denoted by the presence of bait fish to structure. Okay, we just talked about muskies are not intelligent in the fact that they go, oh, I'm going to amble about and find this. They are going to follow structural elements that keep them with bait fish. Right? They don't want to absorb that caloric deficit from getting off of them. As much as we want to stay dialed in on muskies, guess what muskies are dialed in on, Jay? Forage. at all times, right? Sometimes they get out of it. Sometimes they're dialed in, but they want to stay as close as they can possibly to forage. What else would you say, Jay, structurally? What am I missing here? I'm just rambling because I'm kind of on a soapbox.
I know you are. I was just thinking of something. It's just like, and we've all done this. It's just like, this is okay. Back to that lake that we like to eat dinner at.
Right.
This is a good, there's a point before that, you know, kind of on the northwest side around that corner.
Right.
Right. Good looking point. This is a good looking spot, but it's not productive.
Rarely. Unless weather's conducive. Yeah.
That's because the other one, spot B, just north of that 200 yards, is significantly more high percentile.
And it's more high percentile because the weather and what influx of water happens there, right? So the high, what you're getting at is what I'm getting at, the hierarchy of structure, right?
Well, absolutely. There's much more in play there. There is a more gradual tapered down area flat. There's an influx of a creek. And even though it's a little ways away, it has impact on that spot. And that's why it's productive more so than that one that looks good on paper, but is generally not produced anything.
And we've all fished that. We've all fished the spot that looks good. And I've done it where I do my map research, right, Jay? New body of water.
Yeah.
We do it all the time when I'm up there filming with you. New body of water. And we'll be sitting around the shop and going, where are we going today? And somebody will crack off an idea. And I go, okay. I'll go out to the boat and look at it. And you go, here's five or six places that should work based on the rules of structure fishing. Shallow to deep transitions, right? When you get out there, we make an observation of what has been happening climatically. Jay, how many times has said, which way's north, right?
Yes, you do that.
Which way's north? So I understand, like, okay, the way this lake is positioned, the weather's been impacting in this manner. How much? Is it day one, day two, day three, or 5 days or whatever it might be? Smart poker, right? Allow weather to be the final pointer towards your bait fish targeting. Okay, so I talk about in the book, 3-point check, shallow, mid, deep. Well, let's say I show up to a Kentuck, Jay. Everybody knows Kentuck's got muskies. Forget about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the north end of, well, not the north end, but one end of Kentucky, you got like a 40-foot deep hole. You got some shallow grass on the other end. You got a point and some rocks in the middle, right? If the wind's blowing toward that rocky side with a point in that little reef, for days, well, guess where they should be? They're going to probably stage over there, where if it's been blown towards a deep hole, I might be fishing the shallow water adjacent to. If it's blowing down towards the shallow weeds, I might want to look there, but I need to check them all out and make an observation where you go, okay, seasonality plus weather plus structure, right? How do we make an assessment as quick as possible? And what I'm trying to point you at is make an assessment in the first hour. Don't make it by 5 o'clock. Don't make it when the major's over. Play smart poker and go, structure plus weather plus seasonality equals this. To the best of my ability, I have played as smart as I can, the smartest hand I can, where structure, weather, seasonality say they should be here. And I've checked it, and if bait fish confirm that there's activity here, there's a forage base here, I'm going to be correct, right? Because it's really hard to catch muskies where there are no muskies.
Yep.
Right? It's hard to catch muskies where there are muskies, but there is no forage. It becomes increasingly easier when I have positive structure, active bait fish, whatever kind of bait fish that might be, right? And seasonality on my hands or on my side, I can probably catch a muskie.
So there you go. Increasingly easier.
Increasingly easier. Folks, I'm sorry. That's soapboxing. I guess that would be my take of like how we use structure positively. So did I cover all the structural elements? Absolutely not. You can check it out. Next Level Muskie Fishing. I talk about a lot of those. Not to push a product, but there's another podcast with the Structure Fishing Masterclass, one of the most listened podcasts we have. We go through all the elements. But what I'm saying now is take that and combine it with what we're talking about now. It's hand and glove, right? Everything is cyclical. It's not like I've mastered structure fishing. I'm smacking muskies. Take this, run with it. Jaybird, say good night.
Good night, and thank you guys.
Later.